VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
My globe-trotting son is once again parked in his usual and customary place on Saturday morning at 10. And we are here live, as always, to inform you of some things that are going on. And more importantly, if you prefer, we would like to have you call in and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. Like to welcome back all the regulars.
Wait, before you go into that, there is an asterisk by the call-in.
Oh, yes, that's true. Morning. We might as well get it up front, and you say it every time you think of it. I'll say it every time I think of it. We have a new phone number today.
Temporary-ish?
Yeah, you know how temporary things tend to stick around for a while, so I'm not even going to stick my neck out and say one way or the other.
It may or may not be temporary. How about that?
The area code has remained at 904, so don't worry about that. Now, you know, most of you, that we are simulcasting on 101.1 FM and 600 AM. That was a clue. The phone number now, the last four digits are 0600. Easy to remember, right? But we now have a prefix of 831. 831-0600. It's not rolling off my tongue just yet, so if I make a mistake, please correct me.
But that is the number for today. So if you'd like to call in and get some free financial advice, call 904-831-0600.
Yes, and thank you for getting that up front, because that's what we're talking about.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks to again to all the regulars. We depend on you, and it's obviously working well. The show's growing like crazy. The company's doing great. The world is just a rosy place, and it's perfect outside, and it's going to be all weekend. It's just a good time to be alive, isn't it?
Sure is.
And, by the way, the media and a bunch of other people were shocked to find that no colluding was going on out there.
Oh, man, and it seemed like such a plausible theory.
To somebody.
This is without, even prior to the benefit of hindsight, the first time that I heard this accusation, I said, that's ridiculous. A, Trump has so much money, he doesn't need Russian money, so it can't be money. So why else would he do it?
Well, and who would your adversary want in there besides someone that they've already wrapped around their little finger?
Right. But why else would Trump do it? So obviously, influence? No. He's wildly popular at that point in the election. He was wildly popular. He was drawing crowds of close to 100,000 every time he was speaking. Yeah. I mean, there isn't a reason for it. So why would he do it? Why would he risk that? It just didn't even make sense. It was nonsense from the beginning. It's nonsense now. And the fact that we just spent this much time and God knows how many dollars of our taxpayer dollars on this, it just is crazy. It just shows you the world that we're living in.
That's right. But what's really important to you as investors is look what happened in the week that followed that announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened in the first quarter of this whole year. We have had, I'm going to let Adam get into this in a second, but I defined this particular first quarter, which is the greatest in a long time, by the way.
Since 2009.
And the greatest first quarter, even longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I defined it as the slingshot effect. Now, why did I say that? Well, in the month of December, up to and including Christmas Eve day, it was like they were drawing the market back like a slingshot, just poised to change direction sometime by letting go. And when they let go on December 26th, it shot up to levels that we hadn't seen in a long time. We had, if you remember last week, I discussed the Golden Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that, people? Guess what? We had it. And guess what's going to happen again? In all likelihood, it's going to happen again, this time on the NASDAQ.
Right.
It's probably going to happen this week unless something weird happens. You always have to hedge your bets a little bit when you're dealing with the world of potential problems out there. But the point is, we had the event this week that I kind of thought we were going to have. We just finished off a fantastic quarter, and it was, I think, propelled by the back tracking it did in December. Sometimes the market has to correct. Yep. There is your lesson as a client or a listener, that corrections are perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, and they happen on average once a year. Well, 2017 went by. We did not have a correction.
Nope. And we had two, well, sort of had two last year.
Almost
two. I
mean,
I call it two. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say it was two. It felt like two, even if it wasn't technically.
Got a point.
Yeah, we had one in January and then the one in December. And yeah, it was the thing is, if the market only goes up, nothing ever looks like a good deal or a bargain, and no one's going to buy. So when the market goes down, it hurts. Yes, but if you don't sell and the market rebounds, it's like it never happened. Yep. So
what is the thing the market hates more than anything else in the world? Uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
But this report came in and eliminated what many people felt was a great deal of uncertainty. The sigh of relief was palpable, and even on yesterday afternoon, when the Dow sort of had a decision to make, can I maybe get positive? For the quarter, for the month, I guess, it was already for the quarter. It actually held up long enough, high enough that, yes, it did close up high. So we had a bunch of good numbers, and on that happy note, take it away.
Yeah, I will. And if you don't remember what the Golden Cross was, it's when the 50-day moving average crosses over the 200-day moving average.
In this case, for the index of the S&P 500.
Right, and they're both moving up at that time, so in a rising market. So that means that the short-term trend is climbing faster than the long-term trend, which is considered a bullish signal for the market. And it's only happened how many times? 18, did you say, last
week? Yeah, it was about 18 over the last, since 1928.
Yeah, so it's not something that you see that frequently, and typically it is a good sign.
I think we had a caller last week that just got that right out of the darkness, didn't we?
No, they guessed
was
lower.
It that one?
Yeah, no, that was a different one. I think that was the week before.
So I'm listening a little bit to Howard and Angela on the way out here, and they have the same kind of thing that they do once in a while. And it is funny that once in a while, like happened to them today, somebody just shoots out a number and bang, you nail it.
Yeah.
What particular reason?
Levi, I think.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's pretty good.
Anyways. It was quite a quarter. When the dust settled, the Dow was up 11.2%, the S&P up 13.1%, and the NASDAQ was up 16.5% in the first quarter. So really nice. I would take another one of those next quarter. That'd be fine with me.
You could cash in your chips now and sit till December 31st and say, darn good year.
Exactly.
But I don't think you should.
No, I don't think so either, but you could. And then that was really propelled by a rally on Friday afternoon that saw the Dow gain more than 200 points. Strong buying into the weekend. You know how much I like that as a signal going into the next week. So I am cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and there are a couple other things I really like, too. Like the movement in small caps.
Yes.
Which has been fantastic. That means there's a great deal of optimism out there in the business community. Now, we're going to talk a little bit after the break, a little bit more about what happened in the market. And we're going to talk a little bit about why people are so negative about the market and the economy when everything seems to be going fine.
Well, I mean, there were some signs this week that maybe they're not, but I'll get into that
later.
Yeah,
that's what we need to talk about, because there are a lot of things out there that are inexplicable and, frankly, some things that I just do not accept as gospel, and we'll talk about it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after a short break. This is the Bandley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Bandley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Bandley.
And I'm Adam Bandley.
And we have been informed that we have a new telephone number. And whether or not it's temporary, it's the only one that we're going to use for today, at least. 904-831-0600. Rememberable easily because of the 0600, which is our broadcast on the AM side. So if you are going to try to call in today and you try the old number, you're not going to get there. So we'll try to keep reminding people. All right, some other things that were interesting in the market this week and all the good news. The economic numbers are they're not stellar. Adam and I were just talking about this in the break. And one of the things that we always have to remember is the people who do the economic releases and say whether it was a hit or a miss, they're always comparing to the estimates of the, quote, economists. Those are the people that I always say, who are these guys anyway?
I'm not really sure.
But the point of this whole thing is there is not a clear and powerful direction of the way things are going right now. And I'll take it one step further than that. I am still very mistrustful of all the data points because of the shutdown that happened earlier this year and late last year, that I think there's still a lot of things that are being messed with or toyed around with. And my biggest one, my biggest concern, was that they revised the GDP for last year down to 2.9, which I think...
No,
2.2. Well, that was for the quarter, 2.9 for the year.
Okay.
I think that their goal was to make darn sure Trump didn't get his 3%, and I think it was, and this is just me, folks, absolutely me. No one else need take this for anything more than my opinion. I think they were doggone well going to do that no matter what it took. You can form your own opinions. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, that is one opinion. I don't share it, but that's fine.
He's wrong.
Yeah, there was the economic data this week was not great. If you look down the list, there wasn't a lot of beats. There was a lot more misses than beats. Not everything was bad. It just wasn't as good as expected, I guess.
Layoffs were great, though.
Yep. The initial and continuing jobless claims both look good. That is a strong recession indicator when they don't look good, but they do. So.
And this coming week is the jobs releases, so next Saturday we'll be able to tie those two together, hopefully.
Right. We also saw that personal income and personal spending were both up over last month, but they had a really high expectation of 0.3%. Both of them had the same target, and both missed that. They were up 0.1% and 0.2%. So even though they rose, it was considered a miss, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that if it's trending in the right direction, that's probably a good thing. Housing data kind of all over the place, and I'll give you my opinion on that in a minute, but just real quick, here's what happened. Housing starts fell substantially. Building permits fell substantially. Home prices rose, but less than expected. The FHFA House Price Expectations Index beat its forecast. Mortgage applications rose by 9%. Pending home sales missed expectations, and new home sales beat expectations. So what can you take away from all that? In my opinion, nationally right now, the market is in a pretty good balance. I think that there are somewhat equal amounts of buyers and sellers, and you're not seeing a tremendous rise in prices. But if you look locally, and I'm not talking locally here, but locally wherever it is that you might live, you might see a very different picture. For instance, in certain parts of Jacksonville right now, in certain market segments, it's really, really hot and it's hard to find a house, and houses are selling on the day that they're listed. But if you look at other parts of the market, like the higher end market, you might not see that same trend. If you go to New York, you might see something completely different. In fact, I've heard anecdotal stories of prices coming down in the New York City area. So
in the city, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit.
Yeah. So you just real estate, they always say it's very local, and I really agree with that. So if you look at national trends, the data is all over the place. And I think that just depends on what region has the most sales during that time period. Because if you look in one region, it's doing really well, and the other regions are struggling. So it's right now, I think that overall housing is in decent shape, much better shape than what the media is telling you. So it's an interesting study, because it is rebounding still off of the big crash that we had, and it's rebounded pretty hard and pretty fast. But is it even back to where the trend line was prior to the crash? I don't think so.
No, I agree with you, and I think there's there's every reason to be optimistic. And in fact, we wrote a blog. I published a blog this week on our website. And it was something that arose out of a discussion we had last weekend. And I'm just going to read it to you briefly here because something else happened this week that was very interesting. It's called Real Estate, Time to Buy. As young people, baby boomers often opine that if we could ever get our parents' mortgage rates, life would be grand. After all, mom and dad only paid around 5 or 6% for fixed 30-year mortgages. A few decades ago, boomers were paying up to and including about 18%. A lot of you remember that, and not very fondly. We all knew that we would never be so fortunate as to see those old 5% rates ever. Guess what? It not only happened, we actually beat that 5% rate for the past few years. Forget for now the unpleasant economic reasons that caused those rates to fall a few years ago. It was fun and profitable for those of us who got to refi our mortgages, and a lot of us under 4%. The recent economic upturn has caused the Fed to gradually tighten monetary policy. Mortgage rates rose back up to the once desirable 5% range, and then a strange thing happened. When the calendar turned over to 2019, rates began to fall, even in the absence of Fed easing. Suddenly, we again find ourselves in an era of nearly forgotten low mortgage rates. In many geographic areas, 30-year fixed-rate mortgages are once again under 4% for qualified buyers. Further, although home prices have risen, the increase in home values remains manageable. In short, we have perfect conditions for purchasing a home right now. Perhaps strangely, the national inventory of homes for sale is very small. This would generally result in rapid price appreciation, but price appreciation seems to be lagging. This has provided an opening for anyone who is thinking of changing homes to both sell their current home and buy a new home at a good price and with good financing. It is a Goldilocks market for both buyers and sellers. Not too hot, not too cold. It's just right. Anyone contemplating a home purchase or a home sale and purchase should move quickly. Market conditions are virtually unprecedented in our lifetimes. No reasonable person would expect this situation to be anything other than short-lived. In our opinion, now is an excellent time for those who have been contemplating action to execute their plan. Vanwee Financial is not a licensed real estate broker, and our expectations are based solely on experience and knowledge of financial markets and interest rates. Consult a real estate professional if you are contemplating a change in your housing situation. You may well be glad that you did it right now. Now, I thought that was interesting because something happened this week. Rates plummeted again.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good idea last Saturday to say, if you're thinking of doing a real estate deal, do it now. Well, it just became an even better idea in the course of 7 quick days.
It's true.
So, seriously, people, if it's been on your mind, if you've been contemplating doing this and you're on the fence and you don't know, well, prices are up, interest rates are higher. Well, prices aren't up that much and interest rates are lower. I would get yourselves pre-qualified to get a mortgage and see what you can go out and find, because if it happens again that it goes down or prices fall or anything like that, I am going to be the most surprised person around.
Yeah, I tend to agree. The interest rates are, you know, they're historically still very, very low, even below normal. And Jacksonville's market, despite the run-up, is still pretty cheap.
Yeah,
don't tell anyone, because we might get a lot of people flooding the market. But you look at any other major city that is this close to a coastline and show me pricing, and it won't be lower than Jacksonville.
No, there's so much land here. You can actually get a reasonably priced home on a good sized lot with old trees and all that. It's such a wonderful place to be thinking about doing this, that you ought to get out there and do it.
Yeah, you look at some areas south of here that are much smaller cities than Jacksonville, and I wouldn't be surprised if real estate near the ocean was priced even higher than it is in our somewhat mid-major city.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Plus, who has more waterways, more access to water? I've never seen any place like this, frankly.
So, anyways, if you're thinking about buying, you might want to think really hard about it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, a few more topics that are going to come up today. Of course, it's tax time, so I like to get a little bit of tax time into each program here until maybe just the 15th, maybe longer than that. All right, we've got the music playing, so I'm going to finish this one after the break. But remember maybe 6-7 weeks ago, the caller that asked, what are you going to do about the Form W-4 now that we don't have any personal exemptions?
Well, they still use it.
Yeah. I said, well, I'll get back in a week. And they had put out a new one for 18, and it was in use, and I explained a little bit about how to do it. But guess what? There's another new one. The 2019 Form W-4 was just released. Now, what is a W-4? A W-4 is the form that everybody fills out when they take a new job or work where conditions change, and it directs your employer what you want withheld from your taxes. You have a certain amount of discretion in how much is going to be withheld, not complete. I'll get into a couple of the fun details right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we do have a trivia question, which I will give out after I mention again that we have a new phone number for today, 904-831-0600. Many of you may have heard that Lyft went IPO yesterday, meaning it started listing on the stock exchange, initial public offering. And it was priced at 72, but it actually opened almost 20% higher than that, or at least peaked at about 20% higher. It kept 9% over the listing price of 72, but it also lost about 10% during the day. So the people who got in at the high point are down 10%. We'll see what happens. I'm not an IPO fan myself. I just don't particularly like them.
I think that was a very successful pricing on IPO because the initial investors who actually got in on the IPO were up 9%.
Yeah.
You can't really complain about that. They probably wanted 30 or 50. But what that does when that happens, when it pops that high, that means that the investment bankers underpriced the offering, and that really ticks off the owners of the company.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that was a perfectly priced IPO.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll grab the phone in a second, but I want to give out the trivia question in case Don wants a shot at it. The first 3 months following an IPO are considered the best time to own the initial public stock. Why? It's a simple explanation, and I don't know if anybody will think of it. Good morning, Don.
Hey, look here.
What's happening?
I love you. I love you guys. Yeah, you're nice guys. You're Sammy.
Thanks. We love our callers too, you included.
Yeah, but I'm mad about something that you ain't talking about.
What?
This national debt is growing worse and worse every day. Nobody seems to understand. Everywhere I talk to somebody about it, oh, it ain't gonna bother me. But it's gonna come due.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you know this or not, but we're fixing to cross another $1 trillion.
Oh, I know. Every year. $10 trillion in 10 years. That's what the projection right now.
But you know how they always do it in Washington? Oh, well, we'll just have to spend a little more money.
Yeah.
And we'll just have to get the news media to talk about it some more. It'll all be Trump's problem or y'all's problem, but it ain't going to be ours.
You better believe it.
And then, Lee Jr., you better listen to me.
What?
I hear you all the time quoting the news media this and the news media that.
Yeah.
That's the liest, thievingest bust that ever hit the face of the earth that we got up there now.
We're not going to disagree with
nobody,
you on that.
Nobody in their right mind could disagree with your concept. My only point is we've been doing this for the last $18 trillion of debt, and it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not going to be the one that sticks my neck out to say that 22 or 23 or 24 is going to be the end of the line, because I just frankly don't know, but I'm not living my life in fear of it either.
Yeah, well, when you go home tonight, I want both of y'all to think about something.
Yes, sir.
You remember 1929 when we hit the Depression?
Vividly.
I keep asking everybody, what happened back then? Why was there? Nobody knows.
Why did it all come tumbling down? Because it could. It could happen just like that today. But they weren't living their life with that either.
But the money is different now than it was back then.
Yeah, and it might be different again if you read some of the sources on it. But I just can't live my life that way, and I can't advise people to live their lives that way, because then you would be petrified and do absolutely nothing. And if nothing else, the years in the business that I've been in have shown that doing nothing is not a good option.
Well, I ain't going to bother you all day, but I want to know you. So I want you to know something. I want you both to know something.
Shoot.
I'm going to keep on this thing about this debt until I can't breathe air no more. Because it ain't funny. It's going to come due one day, and somebody's going to have to pay it.
You are exactly right, my friend, as always.
All right, y'all have a fine day.
Thanks.
Take care. You have a good one.
You know, the truth of the matter is the piper eventually gets paid somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that we're not worried about it. We all worry about it, and our clients worry about it.
Absolutely.
But it is so far out of our control that all we can do is vote the right way and continue to put people that we think are going to be responsible politicians in place. But unfortunately, people who are responsible don't run for office anymore because they don't want to go through that public scrutity, and they won't get elected.
Tell the truth, you're not going to get elected.
And the thing is, people promise the world when they're running these days, and the world costs a lot of money when you give it to other people. So there's just...
Was that your AOC moment?
I don't know how we're going to get out of this situation. I mean, Donald Trump is trying to grow us out of it, which I think is, of all the solutions, the best possible solution. Yeah. I'm just not sure we can.
No, those days may be gone. It's hard to say. On the other hand, look at Japan. It's 2.5 times its GDP in debt.
And they're still plugging along.
Like that.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention my dear friend Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888. His number has not changed, as ours has, to 831-0600. But Ken is the sponsor of our trivia question. Why are the first 3 months after an IPO the best time to own that stock? Until much later. That's the end of that whole thing. Anyway, the W-4 form, for those of you who missed the background on it, the W-4 is that form that your employer hands you in the stack of stuff when you just start. It says, how much withholding do you want? It used to say, how many personal exemptions do you have? One for you, one for your spouse, one for each kid. Are you blind or 65 or things like that? That would change a little bit. Well, personal exemptions went the way of the dodo bird in December 31st of 17, when the tax law was changed, the Tax Act and Jobs Act of 2017, which was effective 1/1/18. So not having that caused the IRS to have to change it. So the Form W-4, which is called now the Employees Withholding Certificate, is no longer tied to the personal exemptions. But what they did do is that they tied it to what they call the I got to get this name right. It's it'll come up in a second here. It's the number of people, basically, because each one of them affects it. But it's an allowance per person rather than an exemption per person. Now, I like the whole concept of tax simplification, and I have railed many times on the air that nothing ever seems to get easier, despite their claims of tax simplification. Once it has happened, it never seems to be simpler.
No.
And in fact, that has been the case this time. It is true that most Americans are paying less. Now, if you have any sympathy for people in California, New York, New Jersey, and high-tax states like that who had their SALT deductions, state and local tax deductions, limited to $10,000, we'll take it somewhere else because I don't. I have no sympathy for those people. I hope they just all get smart like so many of them are and move to Florida or Texas or wherever they want to go. Anyway, the withholding tables that employers started to use now caught a lot of people unaware because it turned out that people were getting more money back in their paychecks. Oh, duh, because the withholding table reflected the new reality. So the first people who filed their income tax returns for this particular year, which was 4/2018, were complaining that their refunds were down. And the press got all over this. Oh, refunds are down. And, woe is me. Donald Trump screwed it all up. They lied to us, on and on and on. Well, as time went by, the ones that were slightly more complicated, therefore didn't get filed by the end of February, what seems to taken all the wind out of their sails because the average refunds are actually just now a little bit bigger than they were pre-Tax Act. So that's not a big deal. But how do you now, under the simplified and glorious new tax code, determine what your W-4 should say and what you should do about it? Well, here you go. You ready? First, determine if you're exempt from withholding. Now, you're exempt from withholding if either A, you got all your withholding back last year, or B, you're certain that you will owe no federal tax for 2019. So if you qualify, you only have to do lines 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, sign and date the report, and you're done. What if you have more than one job, or you have a spouse and you're both working? Well, then you have to go to the next page, which is the Two Earners Multiple Jobs Worksheet. On the first line there, you'll be prompted to enter the number from the personal allowances worksheet, which is what they call those things now that used to be exemptions. So you enter the number of personal allowances, and then you have to go down to a chart to see if you qualify for the child tax credit. Then you determine whether you're eligible for other dependents credits under the section called Other Credits. Then you go back to the two-earner or multiple-job worksheet and use the tables to get your estimated tax for the lowest-earning job you've got, and then you get it again for the highest-earning tax thing you got. You getting my picture here, people? It's not that easy. We'll go on to more fun things in a minute. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our new phone number for today, and at least for some time, is 904-831-0600. Don't try to call the old number. You will not get anywhere. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. Spring has sprung, people. It is time. Again, trivia question sponsored by First Coast Alarm. Why are the first 3 months of an IPO considered the best time to own that stock until much later? It's a pretty simple answer when you think about it. All right, back to wrap up this W-4 thing. Rather than going through all that rigmarole that I was mocking right before the break, if you have an excessively high refund for your 2018 taxes, or if you are owing more than you want, go back and just simply adjust your W-4 and make the withholding either more or less. The ideal number, if there is an ideal number, is zero. You should neither owe nor get a refund. I know people love their tax refunds, but that's not the theoretically correct way to do things. You don't want to owe Uncle Sam too much because there are penalties and interest sometimes with that. On the other hand, you don't want to be loaning them money all year long just so they can give it back eventually, unless you're just totally incapable of putting money in a savings account. Then I suppose there's some reason to do it, but I don't like it. All right, one of the things I mentioned a while back is that there's a good idea floating around Congress. I hope you were sitting down when I said that.
You're talking about the Green New Deal?
That's a thing floating around, but I said a good thing. Children. It's called the Retirement Bill to Boost Savings. Now, that seems kind of like I could write it. You know, if I got done writing it, you'd love it. Absolutely love it. Well, that's not exactly what it is. What do you expect from a couple of, congressmen? Anyway, it's sponsored by Ron Kind, a Democrat from Wisconsin, and Mike Kelly, a Republican from Pennsylvania. And they have introduced and reintroduced now this bill to increase the retirement savings. Now, there's only two parts to it, which I think is very shallow and hopefully will be expanded on. The first one is the increase in the required minimum distribution age. Right now, from a qualified plan, you're required to start taking required minimum distributions when you turn 70 and a half. This is going to, at least it's proposed, to raise that to 72, which I thought was not really enough until I started doing a little research. And actually, from when the 70 and a half was passed to now, that is a reasonable approximation of the lengthening of the lifespan, the life expectations of Americans. That's partly skewed because of wars and opiates, things like that. So a lot of people are dying way too young for those factors and others. But overall, if you're just doing the statistics on it, that's a pretty good approximation. After all, it's 18 months more. It wouldn't affect everybody by 2 years, but some people it will. Some will be affected by a year. But I like the concept because at age 70 now, there are still a lot of people who are working.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people don't want to start drawing their required minimum distributions at that point. And everyone with an IRA, no matter what kind it is, you have to stop contributing when you turn 70. There are no more contributions allowed to IRAs after age 70. Well, 72 would be really nice. That way you'd at least get your 70 and your 71 year where you contribute without taking out. Now, that can make a great big old whammo difference on how much money you've got, and it delays when you start depleting it. So it's a really, really good concept, and I support it wholeheartedly. I would like to add to that that they would significantly increase contribution limits. And I think they should just take the lid off of Roth IRAs as to who can do one.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Even if you contribute to another one, I think you ought to be able to do the Roth separately.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm a financial advisor, and I'm almost 70. I'm actually almost 69, but that's close enough. So of course these things are appealing to me. That all sounds good. The one thing I'm concerned about, and it's just a feeling. I have absolutely nothing to back this up with except my many, many years among such things. They want to make it easier for employers to join MEPs, multiple employer pension plans, and they want to make it easier to offer annuities to their workers. And when I hear things like this, my alarm bells just go off over and over and over. I was victim of a multi-employer pension plan problem back in 1982, my company was, where we had a Teamsters union then, and our company was in the same multi-employer plan with a lot of other people at the time. And it was a very difficult recessionary time. Many of you probably remember what was going on in the late Carter years and thereafter. And a lot of transportation companies who were the major employers of Teamsters were going under. So some little nameless, faceless bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., before he snuffed out his candle and went home one night, said, "I have an idea." These pension plans were so underfunded because people were dropping out and they had been underfunded. Well, now there's even more employees looking for the retirement benefits and even less employers. So he said, "I have an idea. We'll just charge the shortfall to any company that doesn't go out of business." Wow. It was simple, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that little thing cost my company $282,000 in 1982 terms. Now, that was a lot of money.
And still is.
And still is. And I, just for the record, I paid it all off in increments every single month for a decade, and it went away. But we can't have those things. That's why I've been an inherent skeptic of multiple employer plans for a long, long time. It's very personal to me, and I haven't really seen the benefit since then either. I just get uncomfortable when I hear multi-employer. I get even more uncomfortable when I hear make annuities easier to get. I think there's going to be a lot of people that get swept up in the annuity business where they might actually take control of their own destiny and roll money out of there. Don't know for sure. I do think, and I do give these people credit, I do think it's a discussion that's very timely, and it ought to be put out there and talked about in Congress and hopefully come up with some things that at least the public will be allowed to comment on. So once in a while, I can be slightly positive about things that go on up there.
Yep. We had a question come in via text.
Great.
The new number is just for the radio station. It's just for our 1 hour on air. If you have questions, it is 904-831-0600. Our business line has not changed. That was simply for the radio station. So yeah. That was just a little clarification.
Okay, very good. All right. Those of you who are from other places. I was talking about the people who've been moving to Florida, Texas, and so on. Do you know the difference between residency and domicile?
Oh, no, I don't.
Well, it's kind of technical. Now, what's the reason I bring it up? Well, you may be a resident of the state of Florida, but you may be getting taxed in the state of New York.
That's true.
You have to prove domicile. Now, what constitutes domicile is different state to state. You can be a statutory resident. You can have your domicile in state A, and you can wind up thinking, I moved to Florida. I started voting here, and I can show 365 days divided by 2 plus 1 day, and that may not be enough. Good morning, Tom.
Oh. Hello.
Hey. Oh, hey, Tom.
Good morning. Hi. I had something very interested in what when you were discussing with the man that called a few minutes ago about the debt.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to think about this $22 trillion and how it's looming, you know, like a big, you know, like a big storm. That's not going to ever get paid. The whole idea with that is that, you know, as all the other countries that went to eventual insolvency, that, you know, that's going to have to be consolidated with some international, you know, bank of settlements or Brussels or something like that. But
talking about a national
reset. I agree,
and
we'll talk about it more next week. I got to run because the music's playing. It's a hard break. Thanks for the call. The first 3 months are the best for the IPO because starting after the 3 months, all of the restricted stock sales start coming on, and they'll be flooding the market for several months with sale orders for that stock. When it finally bottoms out, then you might look at getting back in. That's why I don't like them. Thanks for listening. Be back next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.